49. Otto von Kleiner watched the English destroyer explode. Towering orange flames erupted from her, and a solid ball of black smoke spun upon itself, blooming on the dark ocean like a flower from the gardens of hell. The surface of the sea around her was dimpled by the fall of thrown debris and the cruiser's shells, for all of Blücher's guns were still blazing. "Cease fire," he said, without taking his eyes from the awesome pageant of destruction that he had created. Another salvo of star shells burst above, and von Kleiner lifted his hands to his eyes and pressed his thumb and forefinger into the closed lids, shielding them from the stabbing brilliance of the light. It was finished, and he was tired. He was tired, drained of nervous and physical energy, overwhelmed by the backwash of fatigue that followed these last 2 days and nights of ceaseless strain. And he was sad, sad for the brave men he had killed and the terrible destruction he had wrought. Still holding his eyes, he opened his mouth to give the order that would send Blücher once more thrashing southward. But before the words reached his lips, a wild shout from the lookout interrupted him. "Torpedoes! Close on the starboard beam!" Long seconds von Kleiner hesitated. He had let his brain relax, let the numbness wash over him. The battle was over, and he had dropped back from the high pinnacle of alertness on which he had been balanced these last desperate hours. It needed a conscious physical effort to call up his reserves, and during those seconds the torpedoes fired by Bloodhound in her death throes were knifing in to revenge her. At last von Kleiner snapped the bonds of inertia that bound his mind. He leaped to the starboard rail of the bridge and saw in the light of the star shells the pale phosphorescent trails of the four torpedoes. Against the dark water they looked like the tails of meteors on a night sky. "Full port rudder, all engines full astern together," he shouted, his voice pitched high with consternation. He felt his ship swerve beneath him, thrown violently over as the great propellers clawed at the sea to hold her from crossing the path of the torpedoes. Hopelessly he stood and reviled himself. "I should have anticipated this. I should have known the destroyer had fired." Helpless, he stood and watched the four white lines draw swiftly across the surface towards him. In the last moments, he felt a fierce upward surge of hope. Three of the English torpedoes would miss, that was certain. They would cross Blücher's bows as she sidestepped. And the fourth torpedo, it was just possible, would miss also. His fingers upon the bridge rail clenched until it felt as though they must press into the metal. His breath jammed in his throat and choked him. Ponderously, Blücher swung her bows away. If he had given the order for the turn only 5 seconds earlier, the torpedo struck Blücher 5 feet below the surface on the very tip of her curved keel. The explosion shot a mountain of white water 150 feet into the air. It slammed Blücher back onto her haunches with such violence that Otto von Kleiner and his officers were thrown heavily to the steel deck. Von Kleiner scrabbled to his knees and looked forward. A fine veil of spray, like pearl dust in the light of the star shells, hung over Blücher. As he watched, it subsided slowly. All that night they struggled to keep Blücher afloat. They sealed off her bows with the 5-inch steel doors in the watertight bulkhead, and behind those doors they locked 30 German seamen whose battle stations were in the bows. At intervals during the frenzied activity of the night, von Kleiner had visions of those men floating face down in the flooded compartments. While the pumps clanged throughout the ship to free her of the hundreds of tons of sea water that washed through her, von Kleiner left the bridge, and with his engineer commander and damage control officer, they listed the injuries that Blücher had received. In the dawn they assembled grimly in the chart room behind the bridge and assessed their plight. "What power can you give me, Lokkrampa?" von Kleiner demanded of his engineer. "I can give you as much as you ask." A reddish-purple bruise covered half the engineer's face, where he'd been thrown against a steam-cock valve when the torpedo struck. "But anything over 5 knots will carry away the watertight bulkheads forward. They will take the full brunt of the sea." Von Kleiner swiveled his stool and looked at the damage control officer. "What repairs can you effect at sea?"
"None, sir. We have braced and propped the watertight bulkhead. We have patched and jammed the holes made by the British cruiser's guns, but I can do nothing about the underwater damage without a dry dock or calm water where I can put divers over the side. We must enter a port."
Von Kleiner leaned back on his stool and closed his eyes to think. The only friendly port within 6,000 miles was Dar es Salaam, the capital of German East Africa, but he knew the British were blockading it. He discarded it from his list of possible refuges. An island? Zanzibar? The Seychelles? Mauritius? All hostile territories with no anchorage safe from bombardment by a British squadron. A river mouth? The Zambezi? No, that was in Portuguese territory, navigable for only the first few miles of its length. Suddenly, he opened his eyes. There was one ideal haven situated in German territory, navigable even by a ship of Blücher's tonnage for 20 miles. It was guarded from overland approach by formidable terrain, yet he could call upon the German commissioner for stores and labour and protection. "Killer," he said, "plot me a course for the Kikunya mouth of the Rufiji Delta." 5 days later, the Blücher crawled painfully as a crippled centipede into the northernmost channel of the Rufiji Delta. She was blackened with battle smoke, her rigging hung in tatters, and at 1,000 places shell splinters had pierced her upper works. Her bows were swollen and distorted, and the sea washed through her forward compartments and boiled and spilled out of the ghastly rents in her plating. As she passed between the forests of mangroves that lined the channel, they seemed to enfold her like welcoming arms. Overside, she lowered 2 picket boats, and these darted ahead of her like busy little water beetles as they sounded the channel and searched for a secure anchorage. Gradually, Blücher wriggled and twisted her way deeper and deeper into the wilderness of the delta. At a place where the floodwaters of the Rufiji had cut a deep bay between 2 islands and formed a natural jetty on both sides, the Blücher came to rest.